Hello, and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Winifred Gurung, research analyst at the Institute. The Himalayan region is facing an unprecedented political, economic, and environmental crisis. Instances such as the recurring floods in the Melamchi Indrawati watershed and the land subsidence in Joshimath town in Uttarakhand have highlighted issues of sustainability in the Himalayas more than ever before. To discuss this in detail, today we have with us Professor Mahendra P. Lama, Senior Professor in the School of International Studies, Jawaharlal Nehru University, New Delhi, and Chief Economic Advisor to the Government of Sikkim. Welcome to the podcast, Professor Lama.
Thank you, Winnie. Thank you very much.
So the first question is, the Himalayan region is prone to disasters due to its fragile topography and seismicity. In such a region, how do human activities such as the building of dams contribute to natural disasters?
Well, it's a very serious situation in the entire mountain areas, both in the eastern and the western front. But what is core in the entire disaster system or the disaster phenomenon is, it is a reflection of where we have really failed. And I think we have failed particularly in the very development model which we have followed in the past. Despite a very specific topographical, demographic, cultural ecology, and all kinds of uniqueness, we have the same development model in a country like India, right? What we have in Delhi or in Visakhapatnam in Kerala, the same development model we follow. Whereas consciously or in a very, very planned manner, we required a development model which is specific to the entire Himalayan region. Related to this is the core of this development model in the mountain areas, even in a country like Nepal, Bhutan, entire Arunachal Pradesh, to Sikkim, to Kashmir, would be a, some kind of a. It is based on what you call extractive game, and it spreads over water to agricultural commodities to investment activities. You just extract, right? And look at cardamom, ginger, tea, quinine, right? And you can even see the latest is Yarsakumpa, the what you call the caterpillar fungus. And if you see the industrial development in the mountain areas, including pharmaceuticals and all the things, you'll find it. The entire development project is highly extractive in character. That means whenever there is a development interventions, there is bound to be what you call a major adverse impact on the environment and cultural ecology of the region. But at the same time, you will also find there is no development institutions that really takes care of the entire development phenomenon. Look at India. Right, planning commission used to be there. There was nothing in planning commission specifically to Himalayan regions. Today we have Niti Aayog. In Niti Aayog also there is nothing. It is sometimes we produce reports, right? Therefore, and the fourth very creative, very interesting situation is there is no cross-border collaborations on what you call it. Development dynamics, right, between Nepal and Bhutan. There is there is an agreement between Nepal and Bhutan, between India and Bhutan, India and Nepal, India and China, but no agreement talks about anything related to the mountain ecology, environment, livelihood patterns. Therefore, I think the entire development has gone totally wrong, disoriented, and the whatever development takes place, the entire resources are siphoned away to the lowlands from the highlands, right, by developing various agencies, various private sector actors, right, as a result of nothing remains in the mountain areas. And therefore, I would say that has really adversely affected the entire human activities, including the dam projects.
You mentioned cross-border agreements. So could you share about regional cooperation in the Himalayan region? How can sub-regional organizations like the BBIN, Bangladesh, Bhutan, India, Nepal initiative, work on sustainable development in the Himalayas?
There's a huge scope. Say, for example, one of the very critical issues today is cross-border environmental injuries, right? You have seen what happened during the pandemic period. The other very serious issue is water-related issues, right? You have, when everybody talks about India-China water resources, India-Pakistan water resources, but go to the source of these water resources. I was in Kailas Mansarovar, and when I visited from Lhasa to Gansu to Sigatse to Saga, then Torche village to Alai, then you find the origins of what you call the Indus and Brahmaputra. They are most of the tributaries are drying, right? Secondly, I've also seen there is a huge black rocks in the glaciers. Say, for example, I was in one or two glaciers on that side of the border, including Kerala. Then I found it's all black rocks. So, and there is no other option than to really bring cooperations among these countries. Say, for example, how do we coordinate water resource flows between India, Bangladesh, Nepal, and Bhutan, right? One. Secondly, we have now major connectivity projects going on across the borders. We have the integrated checkpoints, land customs, we have the highways, we have the railways, we have the waterways in a big way, they are all undergoing, and these are going to definitely have some kind of impact on the mountain areas. And this brings us to a common platform. Say, for example, what would be the stand of countries like Bangladesh, India, Nepal, Bhutan, and Myanmar, even China, as far as climate change negotiations are concerned? There is absolutely no coordinations, no harmonizations of policies. Every country goes to the climate change negotiation individually, whereas you have so many common problems. Say, for example, glacial lake outburst flood, such a huge problems in Uttarakhand, in the eastern Himalayas, in Nepal, to a large extent in Bhutan. But who really brings all these issues? Our traditional agriculture heritage has been badly dislocated, right, in many countries. Who will bring this to the global world? At the same time, we have our farmers adapting to these kind of situations without knowing that they have adjusted to adverse impact of climate change. Who will take this knowledge of the farmers to the global world? That means you require globalization of the locals. That is that you really have to do the reverse globalization process. So far, we localize the globals. So now the global world should know what has been happening at a farmer's level, at a village level. So I think there is a huge scope for coordinations, cooperations, and bringing together. Say, for example, we have had BBIN motor vehicle agreement. Can you have a BBIN agreement on cross-border disaster management? Can we have on communities managing water resources, right? These are going to be pretty serious, precisely because what is happening in the upper riparian like China, right? What is happening in dry 11 states of provinces of China, including Shanghai, Beijing, Jiangsu, and all these places, dry 11, they contribute almost 50% of Chinese GDP, yet the place of the entire geography is going dry, and how they are diverting Yangtze upwards 1300 kilometers. That really brings the entire focus on regionalism, cooperations, and integrations.
So Talking about borders, what are the implications of the environmental crisis on the security dynamics in the Himalayan region, especially along the borders of countries like India, Nepal, and Bhutan?
You see, you have both traditional implications and non-traditional implications. I have told you about climate change impact, right? There are absolutely new variety of challenges, phenology. You know, new varieties of plants are coming up in the entire Himalayan regions. We do not know what kind of plants are these, what kind of diseases will be brought. You have animal diseases, right, across the Himalayas, which is absolutely new to the entire animal and veterinary medicine services. I was talking to some of the senior veterinary officers about this kind of things are happening. They said no one has really studied, right? And you have warm winters, you have frequent forest fires, you know, you have serious problems. Say, for example, I was just reading one data that shows in 2011, 61% of the rainfall in Darjeeling happened in 6 days. Can you imagine? You can see the intensity of rainfalls. You can see what kind of newer varieties of this. So therefore, I see this has brought about both. It would lead to large scale migrations from the mountain areas to the lowlands, right? That means the entire human security issues would come into being. It would, you know, at a very micro level, it dislocates what you call the scientifically established prey and predator relations in the mountain areas. So therefore, number of reports have been written about it. You know, I myself have been involved in a large number of report writings, including the Prime Minister's task force on the Himalayan regions, and we have highlighted this. But I tell you, the unless and until it really takes a serious traditional security dynamic, the perspective, I think the states, the countries involved would not really, take it seriously. For example, when pandemic happened, right, that it showed that it can close down the traditionally maintained open borders between India and Bhutan in India and Nepal, right? Just one pandemic, right? It totally dislocated the communities that side and this side. Therefore, I think, and you have serious problems. The problem, say for example, one of the very non-traditional security threat is what you call gene piracy. We have noted that some of our genetic resources are very surreptitiously taken to other side of the borders. They are developed into new plants, re-exported to other parts of Himalayan regions. And suddenly you will find a growth in yield, but 2 years hence, 3 years hence, it will collapse because this brings newer varieties of diseases. But in the real cause, what is it? It really uproots your traditional agriculture heritage. No indigenous plants, no indigenous resources. So this is absolutely a different varieties of non-traditional security threat. So therefore, what is very critical is we know the threats in the borders, border as a geometric line. Whenever you have such kind of threats, you have border security force, you have PLA, you have Nepal's army, Bangladesh's army, right? But when it really comes to non-traditional security threat, I don't think army, traditional paramilitary forces would really be able to deal with it. You require a very, very, very comprehensive institutional building process in the mountain areas, cross-border institutional linkages, exchange of scientific data and information. Therefore, the threats are going to be absolutely different from terrorist incursions, insurgencies, all kinds of traditional threats. That's what I feel.
Could you also throw some light on the extent of impact these disasters might have on people, their livelihood, the local economy, natural habitat, and biodiversity of the region, especially in vulnerable Indian states like Sikkim, Uttarakhand, and others which lie in the Himalayan zone?
No, it's going to be disastrous, I tell you. If you see what happened in Kedarnath in 2013, and if you see what happened in Sikkim in 2011 and in adjoining Darjeeling, right? And at one go, it can wipe out what you say is the cultural and natural heritage, right? And to a large extent, all these are man-made, like in Sikkim, right? Sikkim government decided to move from hardly 60 to 70 megawatt of electricity produced in the state to 5,000, 6,000 megawatt at one go in 2003. But when it decided that, it did five significant, it ignored five significant factors. One, you did not have legal and process related institutions in the state. Number two, you did not have the manpower, the capabilities in the state to regulate all these. Number three, no one was serious about the environmental impact assessment. So some of the environmental impact assessments in some of the major projects, 20 plus, I think almost 28 hydropower projects were done by the forest department. Can you imagine? Right? And the fourth very interesting thing is all the developed, most of the IPPs, independent power producers, you brought except one or two, they were absolutely new to mountain geography, mountain culture. They were absolutely new to hydrological processes, environmental flows, because they had never done such kind of projects in the mountain areas. Right? Therefore, you can imagine people were uprooted, displaced, entire what you call it, the animal movements, animal corridors were totally disturbed, community living was dislocated. You'll find that. And the second impact you can find is the mushrooming of buildings in almost all the major towns, including in Darjeeling, in Kalimpong, Nainital, Mussoorie, Meghalaya, right, Mizoram, Sikkim, on all these places you will find it's absolutely haphazard mushroomings. And nobody really takes care about whether this is, what is the carrying capacity, right? Today, suddenly when it happens in Josimath, everyone is talking about it, this report or that report. But I'll tell you, a town like Darjeeling, a town like Gangtok, right, to a large extent, even a place like Mussoorie or Nainital are bound to face this kind of difficulties. Therefore, I think, and this has, these difficulties are not related to just development and destructions. This kind of phenomenon would really impact upon the entire culture part of it, the sustainable development part of it, the carrying capacity part of it, or even the national security dynamics of a particular country.
So lastly, what sustainability measures have the Himalayan countries and Indian Himalayan states taken? What is the extent of the implementation of these measures? So, for example, in 1976, the M.C. Mishra Commission report called for a ban on heavy construction around Joshimath in Uttarakhand, but it was not followed. So how can the state and the society work together to take appropriate steps to protect the environment from otherwise imminent disasters?
There are no dearth of studies. You mentioned about a very significant study by Mishra and the team. There are studies by Swaminathan and the team. There are studies by the Prime Minister's Himalayan Mission in India, ICIMOD, WWF, UNFP, right, or UNEP, TERI, and our own studies in Sikkim, like the Human Development Report, which I wrote for Government of Sikkim in 2001, Then the Prime Minister's task force in India, of where I was also a member, right? You have reports by Wadia universities, Wadia Institute, universities. There are a lot of reports, and all these reports have meaningfully discussed and told the government that these are the way forwards. But I tell you, first of all, the states are not serious about these problems. I told you, only if it becomes a crisis, or only if it becomes a serious national security or internal security threat, then the governments and the states tend to go into action. One. Secondly, there is no, what you call it, national institutions to really monitor, regulate, evaluate all these processes. Look at our country, India, right? Where is that institution? Today, if I want to tell someone that, hey, I can see absolutely a strikingly similar phenomenon going on between Western Himalayas, in the Eastern Himalayas, or in Nepal, or in Bhutan, or in Myanmar, where do I go and tell them? Which is the institute? Tell which is the institution? Which is an individual, right? We don't have that, right? And more than that, where is that institutions that brings knowledge from what is happening in Bhutan, what their development interventions are there, what is happening in Bhutan, what are their development interventions and experimentations? Who will bring this knowledge? Universities have their own limits. That's what we tried in, when you are building Sikkim University setting up, we did try. But see, it's a very, very difficult task. Every conflict, say for example, when you stand in a place like Sikkim and look into 800 kilometers perimeter, you will be surprised. You know, any conflict in the world, right? You name any conflict in the world, you will find there. You want water conflict, insurgency, liberation war, Chinese incursion, Second World War, except the nuclear war, right? You say Naxalite movement, Maoist movement, to a movement like for a separatist state within Constitution of India, like Gorkhaland, you name any constitution. Nowhere in the world you will find this kind of conglomerations of conflicts than in the northeast part of India, in the entire eastern South Asia. And every conflict, since this is happening mostly in the hill and the mountain areas, every country has, every conflict generates or triggers a huge crisis of livelihood, of dislocations, of what you call it, future destructions. But at the same time, let me also tell you, the entire mountain ecology remained a very compact ecology. Today you are talking about sea routes, you are talking about Vizag port to going to what you call to Malaysia, to Singapore, to US. But we also had mountain ports, right? You are talking only about sea ports, but we had mountain ports. We did exactly the same business of trade. We did exactly the same business of pilgrimage. We also did the same business of environmental resources, right? Sharing of environmental resources. So, and they were mostly informal. But in case of the sea routes, you formalized everything, you institutionalized everything. But in case of the mountain areas, you did not do anything. You just left it as it is like. Whereas sea routes, you don't see the borders. You are interacting in a port like Madras, you are interacting with Malaysians, but you don't see the Malaysians. Right, but if you are in the land borders, you just stand between border between Bhutan and Nepal, between India and Nepal, or Bhutan and India, or Myanmar and Manipur. You can talk to the people across the border. You can shake hands. You can see them smiling. You can interact with the environment. So the entire concept of development has to be coordinated, has to be well thought out. And this cannot be done without taking into considerations with what is happening in other countries.
Thank you for the sharp insights and analysis, Professor Lama.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also follow us on social media. We are on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.